welcome to the first event in a four-part health systems innovation series that Matter is producing together with Avia. I'm Stephen Collins. I'm the CEO of Matter, a healthcare technology incubator and innovation hub with a mission to accelerate the pace of change of healthcare. We do three things in service of our mission. First, we incubate startups. Since we launched in 2015, we've worked with more than 850 companies, ranging from very early to growth stage startups. We have a suite of services to help them at every stage of development, and collectively they've raised about $5 billion now to fuel their growth. Second, we work with large organizations such as health systems and life sciences companies and payers to strengthen their innovation capacity. We will help them find value in emerging technology solutions. We'll help them empower their internal innovators to unlock the value of those ideas, and we'll help them create a more human-centered healthcare experience through system-level collaborations. Third, we're a nexus for people who are passionate about healthcare innovation. We bring people together to be inspired, to learn, and to connect with each other. And we produce a lot of programs, including larger scale events for the broader community, as well as small forums that are exclusively for our members. I am delighted to work with Avia on this four-part series on health systems innovation. And today we're joined by a panel of experts to discuss how C-suite leaders can work across their organization to develop alignment and champion for change. Avia's Senior Vice President of Strategic Partnerships, Amanda DeMano, will be moderating the conversation. She has more than 20 years of IT experience, both within and consulting for health systems, including more than a decade with UChicago Medicine. If you have questions for our panelists throughout the program, please put them into the chat. Amanda will weave them into the conversation as appropriate. And with that, I will pass it over to Amanda to introduce our panelists and speak a little bit about the current state of health systems before diving into the conversation. Amanda, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Stephen, and everyone who has joined this webinar. I see some familiar names out there. It's fun to have you virtually connected with all of us this morning. I am Amanda DeMano, as Stephen mentioned, Senior Vice President for Strategic Partnerships. Avia, if you're not familiar, is an organization that is helping health systems to achieve digital success with greater speed, discipline, and impact. You know, we work with a network of 56 leading health systems that are prioritizing digital transformation. It's so hard to do this work alone. So we are purpose-built to really bring those forth, the tools, the resources, and the connections that you need to accelerate and de-risk and improve time for value on most strategic pressing priorities. This is a first in a four-part series focused on how startups and innovation advocates, like all of us, can move from conceptual thinking about problems through implementation to really advance new approaches in health systems. This first session is focused on chief information officers and how other C-suite leaders are working across their health system to develop alignment and ultimately be champions themselves for change. I know that the pace of change is really slow and that the journey is really long. I wake up every day thinking about how we can add pace for health systems, speed up pipelines for solution companies, and unleash all that data that's sitting in our assets to really truly transform how all of us experience a healthcare ecosystem. I hope that this panel discussion is just one more way Avia and I today can contribute to building momentum for change. And I'm excited to introduce our panelists who I'll invite to go off mute and off camera. First, Paul Brown is Henry Ford Health System Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer. He oversees all aspects of information technology for the system, and he specializes in leading transformational change in a very complex organization that has more than three decades, and he has more than three decades of experience leading information technology. Second, Tressa Springman is the Chief Information Officer and Chief Digital Officer for LifeBridge Health. LifeBridge, if you're unfamiliar, is one of the largest and most comprehensive providers of health-related services to the people of Maryland. Tressa brings her experience in technology to support the academic system with the warmth and personal attention of a community continuum of care. And then third, we have Taylor Hamilton. Taylor is a seasoned professional serving as Senior Vice President and Chief Consumer Officer at Ballad Health. Ballad is a system consisting of 21 hospitals in Northeast Tennessee and Southwest Virginia, with a very strong commitment to delivering unparalleled consumer experiences. Taylor leads a dedicated team of aligning every aspect of the organization with customers' needs. I am so excited to kick off this conversation with three of our Avia members. I would just like to start by acknowledging that the role of a C-suite leader in the topic of digital can take a lot of different forms. We have some C-suite leaders that are there to be a visionary and think about like the art of the possible. We have others that are just there to be, you know, an enabler and removing blockades from their team. I would love you all to introduce yourselves to this audience and describe how you characterize your role in your organization vis-a-vis digital. Can I start with you, Teresa?
Yes, and thank you very much, Amanda. Good afternoon, everyone. You know, we had a coach come do a personal mission and vision journey with our team about 5 years ago, and I wish it had happened earlier in my career. If you check me out on LinkedIn, what you'll see is that my personal mission statement is that I'm an ideas to outcome architect. So when you ask how to really distill down what I enjoy and what I think I'm good at, it's taking an idea, an organizational idea, coming up with a strategy, a structure, a function, getting it implemented, and then gifting it to an effective operator. So thank you for the opportunity, and thanks for having me join with these fantastic peers in speaking this afternoon, Amanda.
Thank you. Taylor, do you want to go next?
Sure. Good afternoon, everyone. Well, much like what Tressa said, I feel like I do a little bit of all of it. I don't know if you were to ask my peers if they would agree or not, but I feel like I do all of it. You know, I like to cast the vision on the art of the possible and try to really get folks excited about what the potential of digital and how it could really help transform healthcare delivery and help fill a lot of the gaps that we're seeing across the industry. But at the same time, I also, you know, like to dig in and help remove the barriers. And it's a lot of communication to mostly providers about, you know, why this is important. Yes, medicine is changing, but you're still the expert and we really need you to help all of this be successful. And then I like to even go down another layer you know, I get down in the weeds a lot. Many of the meetings I've been in today have been in the weed conversations, but I think it's extremely important in our roles to really be able to look at everything because it's so new, especially in healthcare, this journey that we're on. We're kind of building the plane together, right? So there's not a right or wrong way to do it. And I feel like if I lose too much sight of what is happening right in front of me at various levels of my team, I feel like we might go off the rails a little bit. So I like to be involved in omnipresent.
Thank you. And Paul.
Thanks, Amanda. And thanks, Tressa and Taylor. Might be a better question to ask my colleagues. Perhaps they would just say I'm schizophrenic. I think I kind of do maybe four things in the organization or try to do. One is help people understand what's the importance of this kind of technology. And I talk a lot about things like, in 5 years, we're probably going to all have to care for more patients with 10 to 20% fewer caregivers. So we have to automate and provide consumer self-service and new access methods, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I play that kind of role in terms of the why. But then also, you know, sort of at three levels, and this is a repeating cycle in my mind. One is helping create the technical capability. So, you know, if we're going to do self-scheduling, we need to make sure the technology allows it. And then sort of once you do that, I try to help the organization with adoption and very data-driven adoption to riff on self-scheduling. You know, we have some people who are early adopters, great, but how do we get it broadly used and understood? And then sort of the third thing I find myself involved in is digital capabilities have to be deeply integrated with all kinds of human-based and telephonic processes and other things as well. When you think about patient access and self-scheduling, we all have traditional modes of doing that. Ultimately, digital needs to be deeply integrated with those as opposed to separate and distinct from them. And that's a hard thing to figure out. And we're, you know, kind of cutting our teeth on that. And what I would say to tech entrepreneurs is you have to think at all those levels. Many think just about technical viability, but the other two pieces are actually harder, adoption and integration into operations, in my opinion. So said a lot there, but you know, hopefully that was useful for the group.
I think, you know, knowing what to work on and understanding and decoding, maybe for someone in our audience, how do health systems like make their decisions about prioritizing digital projects and programs? You know, we've seen all kinds where there is a really interesting solution that like just comes into an organization and for whatever reason hits a nerve and a spot and just like has meteoric adoption or and those that, you know, may take 2-3 years to convince and align stakeholders. You know, I know the work that we do with all of you, and one of Avia's value propositions is we really help align stakeholders in an organization to make a decision on what to prioritize, because you can't do everything. So how do you, how does your organization prioritize what you're going to focus on in digital? Maybe I'll start with you, Taylor, since you have a very consumer focus, and then we'll kind of broaden with Paul and Tressa.
Well, I don't really have an easy answer because we're constantly evolving. We started our digital journey with we need to do this because this is what's happening in the industry and we need to be heading in this direction. And then the pandemic hit and it really accelerated a lot of different things. And our plan, this is our plan and this is our roadmap and this is what we're going to do. It was like throw it in the shredder because now this is our new plan. And, you know, being agile, the one thing the pandemic did is said, okay, we have to be nimble. We have to be agile. We got to run around. We got to change our things and our strategy. We can't be married to one strategy. So during the pandemic, it's okay, what do we need to do right now to serve our customers that are being told to stay at home? So, you know, that's where we quickly did, virtual visits that was slated to happen maybe 2 years later because of the ramp up we needed. And we executed it in like 3 months and it was successful, but that happened. And now we're resetting again where, okay, the pandemic is somewhat behind us. We're still seeing patients, but somewhat behind us. And now what does this new normal look like? What are the buckets look like? Of course, you know, we're working with Avia on those buckets and we're dividing them up into the consumer piece and the care piece, and then the operations piece, and then identifying, drilling down into that, what we believe the priorities would be. And it's based on where we're seeing the largest gaps. So, you know, we look at data, to Paul's point, to help us drive our decisions. On the consumerism side, we look at data it's all consuming and it's wonderful, but you know, our community wants virtual visits and they want to self-schedule. Those sounds like two relatively easy things to launch, but it's not. It's extremely complicated. You know, OpenTable, it's so easy to get a dinner reservation, but we're not scheduling dinner reservations. You're trying to get into a physician's schedule who's also teaching at a local university and rounding on patients and also might have an emergency brain surgery in the middle of the day. So it's like very complicated. But that's how we do it. So we look at, here are our areas of opportunity. Here are the resources we have available, because everyone on this call, I'm sure, is aware that, or in this webinar, is aware that resources are limited right now on the hospital healthcare side of the house. We don't have 30, 40% operating margins. You might have less than a 1% operating margin. So you have limited funds, and then you have limited resources for people to actually get the work done for implementation and the change management and everything else. So we look at, okay, here are the priorities. Now, how do we drill down based on our current resources that will make the largest impact? And then that's what we move forward with. That's a very long-winded way of answering that.
That's okay. Paul, for your organization at Henry Ford, you know, how are you working through the prioritization process?
I think Taylor was remarkably candid and concise. To be quite honest with you, there's a lot of sausage making involved. And there's always the, I came back from a conference and saw a thing, so why don't we go do X kind of phenomena? But what I would say is, you know, we have lots of work groups and processes. And what I've seen be most successful in our organization are digital efforts that, one, align with some kind of broader priority for the organization. So coming out of the pandemic, many organizations really were struggling to regain their footing in terms of volume and access. And so I think a lot of places said, well, we should make self-scheduling and ease of access a really important thing. So it aligned, you know, more broadly. We as a health system are starting to work a lot on value-based care and population health. And so we're starting to prioritize things like digital outreach for care reminders and gaps in care and things of those nature. So I would say, one, the things that wind up getting the most stickiness and being most successful are things that align with something we're doing more broadly that's important. The other thing that I think that I've seen, you know, help things be successful in our organization is where there's great clarity about how a digital capability fits into someone's accountability or workflow. You know, there's all these one-off apps that are going to gather information about diabetics. It's got to go somewhere, and somebody has to know it's there and take action on it. So those things that have an obvious linkage into accountability and workflow tend to be more successful in our organization as well.
Tressa, how are we prioritizing at LifeBridge?
So I'll be a lot more succinct, and this will sound as though it's a very structured process, but the sentiment and the journey, as Taylor and Paul have shared, is much more circuitous. You know, first of all, we've got to start with the end in mind, and our business strategies need to drive our technology enablement, and digital is no different. If you get misalignment out of the gate with the shiny toy, you won't have a sponsor. You won't have people incented to be your successful partners. So it's fluid these days. You usually don't have pretty concrete strategic plans, but you typically do have strategic pillars, and they guide your annual plan. And that annual planning process might then surface those opportunities where digital enablement will advance your strategy. A lot of times they go hand in hand with other elements of the strategy, but there's so many nice things that tuck in under that, such as who should your governance structure be for the next annual plan year? And that perhaps is then driven by the goals you're trying to achieve, how digital will enable them, and then what executive sponsor makes the most sense to join your governance group. So for example, when we were on our digital front door journey very actively and early, we used the AVIA competency model to do a gap assessment of what we had and what we ought have. And then we brought together our revenue cycle executive, our executive over the medical group and all of our physician practices. And honestly, and as everyone knows, part of our marketing team, to really have ownership on the elements of the goals that we all agreed to digitally enable for the year. And they knew I and my team were there to support them, but it became really an element of their own ability to meet their goal for the year for the entire organization. So for me, it's alignment and it's governance. And while that sounds easy, as articulated prior to my own shared comments, it's messy, it's hand-to-hand combat, and it's certainly dynamic and ever-changing. But I like working within a framework. It gives me a nice sense of artificial safety.
It does put a little bit of structure on the chaos. So I'm going to stay focused a little internally for a second longer. You know, internally working across your C-suite peers, partners, you know, what are the characteristics of good partners amongst your peers to really help be advocates and drive change? What are you looking for across that C-suite to support you with? And I'll start with Paul.
Well, a couple of things come to mind. One, I have the most success working with partners who can sort of can articulate the opportunity or the challenge as opposed to the solution. So I work best with folks who come and say, here's what we're trying to solve for, or here's an opportunity we want to go after, versus I saw a thing from a vendor and I want you to implement this. So, partners, I think, who can articulate the opportunity or the need and let our technology and other professionals, you know, determine the most appropriate solutions, I think is really helpful. Another thing that I think is really helpful is partners who can own their accountability related to this. And those accountabilities might be a few things. One would be, there's a lot of messiness in healthcare processes, and a lot of that is driven by unnecessary variation. And so partners who can really help standardizing things, you know, we have umpteen ambulatory clinics. Do they have standard hours? No. Do they have standard SLAs, turnaround times, et cetera? No. I think information technology can help with a lot of things, you know, once they're sort of standardized. And then maybe the third element to me that's successful partnership is folks who can kind of really understand what driving adoption entails and really understand change management techniques and understand that certain people to change need to be cajoled and other people need to be kicked in the butt. And, you know, you need to use what levers you have to help get people, you know, to a new place. And I could provide some, you know, specific examples, but, you know, for example, getting employed physicians perhaps comfortable with commercial partners who can do virtual visit solutions. I mean, that's, you know, that's tough, but that's really important in certain situations. So those are kind of some attributes in partners within our system that have I've aligned well with, and we've had some success working on things together.
Taylor, what are some of the characteristics of your favorite, like, internal partners in driving change?
Well, really heavy alignment with IT, because we, of course, everything digital will touch IT at some point. And then not just, one or two people in IT, you know, almost like an entire cross section of IT, because various IT owners have different responsibilities. So the person responsible for Cadence and Epic, it's actually building the schedules, might not know anything about the upcoming things coming down the pipe with MyChart. So that's really important. Another piece is legal and compliance. We have somebody from legal and compliance at the table, because we get really, really far down the road, and then we'll bring in legal and compliance, and they're, of course, they're doing what they need to be doing to protect the company. And they're like, whoa, 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 we need to think about this, or we can't do this. So we've shifted gears there and make sure they're at the table. And then based on the project, and Paul mentioned this, operational or clinical ownership is really important. I'm not clinical. I've been in healthcare my whole career, but I'm not a clinical person. And it just brings a lot more credibility to the project when you have some sort of a champion. And when we rolled out Epic, we're on Epic EMR, and we rolled out Epic, we had physician champions, and we've replicated that model with our digital initiatives as well. And we look for physician champions that want to tell other physicians and clinicians, hey, this is really cool, and I'm in these meetings, and this is what it can do, and helps be our cheerleader on that side, which has been wonderful. Plus, they just bring, the clinicians bring a completely different perspective. And then, of course, alignment with our nurses. Now, that is also huge, because nursing makes up the majority. We're a hospital system. The majority of our employees are nurses. So making sure whatever it is that will impact them is actually going to help them. It doesn't take a long time to learn. They're not going to figure it out. It's easy. It's quick. It's there. And it's actually something that they want. So I can keep naming people, but it really varies based on the project. There's not an easy answer. So when we look at the strategy, we look at the priorities, we look at the resources, we're just like, okay, we're going to go after this. who are the right people to have at the table? What makes the most sense? And then we will pull those folks together. And then you know, that's how we're setting up our committees and launching our projects.
Great. There's somebody I hear, Tressa, who agreed with your comments about, you start and building a process is so important to have the end in mind, but you're going to run into naysayers along the way. So maybe that would enhance your comments on, who are your best advocates, but what are the tactics you use to overcome the organizational pushback and the naysayers? And
so look, you always go farther together. And so finding an executive stakeholder to be a partner, and making sure that they, for whatever reason, are individually motivated to help you lead the organization through that change is critical. As an IT professional with a lot of years, we know how to implement pretty well, but implementation is much different than adoption, is much different than achieving the outcomes. But our business partners know what outcome they'd like to achieve. And typically we're able to partner and bring the resources to bear on implementation. I mean, at the end of the day, like anything else, it's a change management exercise. And, if you've got a good dynamic aligned duo between your digital team and your operating team that understand the outcomes that you want to provide to your patients, your community, your organization, together, you're able to lessen the trough of change or bring together the duration it takes you to move people through that. And that's where all the peanut gallery comes into play, as you suggested, the naysayers. You're always going to have that. People need to come along for the ride. I think as humans, any one of us know that if we've got a tightly aligned and inspired partner that we're working on something with, you don't feel lonely and alone in the batter box when the balls come flying at your head.
Great analogy.
Just to follow up on Taylor's comment for a minute, as the IT guy in our organization, one of the things we did, I've made very few good decisions in my career, but this one I think was a good one. 5 years ago, we actually created in IT a small group. It was only like five people that we called the Consumer Facing Solutions Group, to cut across all the IT silos from the lens of a patient or consumer, because we were experiencing exactly what you were saying, Taylor. We'd tweak something over here in scheduling and downstream stuff wouldn't be ready. So we've had a lot of value from that group, because they look horizontally again from the view of a consumer, which is not traditionally how we've all, done stuff in healthcare. We've always looked through the clinician lens and other lenses. So for what that's worth, your comment really resonated with me and, one thing for folks to think about considering.
Because we have so many people in the audience who I assume are coming from an outside perspective, you're providing them, what's happening within the four walls of the health system and why we are sometimes so slow or hard to, because the implementation complexities and just these decisions are really hard and have a lot of stakeholders. But when you are pivoting and looking externally for best fit partners for your organization, what kind of things are you looking for them to bring? And maybe if you can talk to your organization, or more generally, about the maturity that's needed to work with, a startup that's looking for its first partner versus a well, funded and has market traction and a solution that's, pretty well market tested. And maybe some of the realities of working across that spectrum with some of your experience. Tressa, do you want to go first?
If you'd like me to lead into, what are some of the most problematic situations you've been involved in, I'm happy to hop off that diving board, because, hats off to people early in this space. And I would say we're all early in this space. There isn't a class report. There isn't necessarily a Gartner magic quadrant. We're kind of out there looking for blood in the water. And so you've really got to rely on your networks. I am on my third search to schedule product in fewer than 6 years. These are quickly moving environments. The organizations, as you noted, run from incredibly risky and immature to pretty well sought out and mature, but there are few of them. There really are few of them. And so it gets back to that governance process and just having a conscious and visible discussion and decision about here's what the market's looking like and are we willing to take that kind of risk? Now, that may be informed a little differently if your organization invests in digital. Then they might be looking for more of an early stage company. It also has to do with your culture. If your culture is risk averse, that's pretty telling about, you know, doing an epic first or, a rule out type of methodology as opposed to someone who's like, hey, we can find an early stage that might be hungry, might want to go at risk, might make it more economically advantageous. So there really is a tremendous number of characteristics that go into that that equation, Amanda, and many of them are organization specific. But for me, probably the biggest power is that of network. And I've been especially grateful for Avia and the other members of Avia when I find myself in this space, having to make some recommendations and decisions about a very immature and highly evolving area to just learn from other peers about what are they doing, how do they approach it. We've had a lot of misfires and we've had some resounding successes. I don't think there's anything that's been perfect in this space just because of how quickly it's been unfolding.
Thank you. Paul?
I guess a couple things I would say or advise early stage companies, startups, et cetera, and working with health systems. One is pick the health systems that you pursue, you know, really carefully, you know, based on a couple of things. You know, a lot of health systems are really struggling financially and just don't have the bandwidth or capacity, not just to buy a solution, but to commit resources to doing it well. And then I think the other thing is there's different personas maybe for different health systems. And what I mean by that is, as Tressa said, there are some that are like, hey, we're all about new stuff that didn't ever exist any before. There's places like Henry Ford, which I would describe as kind of fast follower kind of mentality. And then there's sort of mainstream and slow follower. So if I were part of a early stage company, I'd really be trying to think through how do I discern that profile. Another comment I would make is ultimately all these digital solutions are at some level about data and data integrating into healthcare processes. I mean, I've seen a number of solutions that are kind of like online banking before you could pay bills. Like, that's not really super satisfying unless I can actually do something. And all these digital solutions in healthcare ultimately need to feed into a clinical workflow of some type where something happens, a prescription gets renewed, an appointment gets scheduled, a physician responds to a medical question. So that answering how does my solution fit into the incumbent ecosystem from a process and a data and a technology perspective, I think is super important because the more, when I hear from early stage organizations that have thought that through very carefully, that's much more compelling than the, we have a thing that does something and we want to partner with you to make it bigger.
Yeah, you know, Paul, so. I'm going to hop in on that because saying it's free or you don't need to involve IS or it won't take resources, they may sound good up front, but you know, per what Paul has said, if you're looking for a successful partnership, please don't let that be your lead.
Taylor, given that you're focused on the consumer, Ballad operates in a unique market. It's a lot of rural and health inequities in your region. How do you think about partners and how does that weigh into how you face the external market?
Well, a lot, echoing a lot of what Paul and Tressa have already said, I mean, we still face the same, I don't want to say challenges, but we have the same boxes that we look to check off when we're talking to partners. To carry on a little bit of what they've already said, some of the things we look at, or I would caution against, is unrealistic ROIs. sometimes I get these ROIs and I'm like, this is amazing. If this actually happens, I will be lifted upon everyone's shoulders and there will be a parade for, finding this product. And I have been a small business owner. And when you are a small business owner, or you're launching, you believe in your product, you put your entire heart into it. And I'm 1000%. But when you are talking to health systems specifically that have very small margins, maybe also try to figure out their financials. Almost everything's public these days. And really understand when you're walking into the conversation, what that looks like. At-risk contracts always are great. That's obviously at risk, is at risk for both parties involved. But, I think it's a lot easier to do a proven model where we think this is going to be your ROI. This is how much we would like to charge for this tool, but let's do some sort of a ramp up to prove, hey, this is, we're doing what we say we're going to do. We have an innovation arm and a venture arm too, that looks at anything that's in a younger kind of seed funding or series A's and B's. We work very closely on the consumer team and the digital team with our innovation and venture teams to see if there's anything that we could do with co-development or board seats, or how do we help steer each other and figure this thing out together. That's something we're really interested in. And then again, and I've mentioned this several times before when I presented, but working with organizations that don't have a one size fits all approach to how they do their pricing, I also think is very important. That's really easy for me to say when I'm sitting in the seat that I'm sitting in, but not in the startup seat, but when I'm talking to vendors and they're like, oh, it's this much per bed and you have this many licensed beds. I'm like, well, yeah, I have that many licensed beds, but only 40% occupancy. So my annual contract is based on the number of licensed beds we have per the state, yet only 40% occupancy for inpatients. And of the 40% occupancy, 80% is Medicare and Medicaid payers. I only have 20% is commercial or self-pay. And if you look at that, it's like, I can't go and justify that, right? So, how do we continue to work together on the partnerships? And I've had tremendous conversations in the last couple of years with startups because their heart is in it. We're all in healthcare for the right reason, right? We want to help people and we want to keep people out of the hospital. I think that from a consumerism seat, I think we're doing our best job when we only have 40% occupancy or lower, right? Because we're keeping people healthy and out of the hospital. And many of the tech startup companies that I interact with are trying to pull business out of the hospital. Nobody wants to go to the hospital and keep it close to home. And I'm 1000% for that. And I think that's tremendous. But how do we work together to figure out what's the best way to make this affordable for everyone? When it comes to rural, we do have some Wi-Fi challenges, broadband challenges. Hopefully our government comes up with a tremendous way of solving for that. But the one thing, and we've done studies that our community has, they might not have broadband at home, but 95% of them have a smartphone. So we know that it's really not even based on any sort of socioeconomics. It's the majority of our entire community. We serve 1.1 million people. They have a smartphone. That is the number one way we're interacting. Nearly 20% of our entire community has downloaded our app, which is awesome. And that we really think that this is our best mode of communication, and it's all digital, right? So what can we put, what sort of solutions, what is the community looking for? What solutions can we put into this app container that we've co-developed and really bring healthcare to them, to keep them healthy and ultimately out of the hospital?
Thank you. I'd like to just double click on Taylor's comments about like solution companies bringing forth economic models? Because there's also a question in the chat. You know, Paul or Tressa, can you comment on, you know, the helpfulness of that kind of a demonstrated, you know, economic model or ROI claim help you in the advocacy for bringing a solution forward?
Want to go ahead, Tressa, first?
Sure. Thank you, Paul. You know, usually when an organization is working on a strategy, we're employing many tactics to get to the goal. So I think that's where the messiness comes in. As I know my peers would understand, let's just pick on length of stay. Not that anyone has a problem with that since COVID. But, you know, when you're deploying 15 different things, including virtual nurses that are assisting with discharge or virtual social workers who are packaging up what might need to be required after an inpatient stay, or even a digital meds to beds. You know, yes, that can be a contributing factor to a reduced length of stay, but usually it gets messy and it's really hard to identify which one of those levers might have translated into kind of a reduction in the number, assuming you achieve your goal. However, I wouldn't discourage people from taking a stab at it. They just need to be realistic about their willingness to allow us to use it as a data point and to understand that we may need to partner with them to evolve it a little bit, depending on our own internal business planning or ROI process. Taylor's comments were good. What becomes really self-defeating is when you get into an arm wrestling about, no, you know, we're really hyped up about your product and we think it will help. And no, we don't believe your ROI, and they'll just continue to die on that hill. So I love it when they have a willingness to put something out there. Typically, they aren't the only tactic we're employing. So a line of sight on improvement against a metric is usually a little messier than inferred, but a willingness to partner with us and work through perhaps what is a direct line of sight and measurable, and ideally if they're willing to go at risk for it, is a conversation that I enjoy. Paul, thank you.
I think it's incredibly important for purveyors of solutions to have thought this through. I will say, though, oftentimes it reveals naivete around the healthcare industry itself for the reason Tressa said. And in addition, a lot of digital solutions can save 10 minutes of a nurse's time per shift, or, you know, 3 minutes per call with a scheduler. Question is, can I change my cost structure based on that? Usually not. And so I think intellectual honesty about, you know, what can be achieved as benefits and whether or not that truly translates into financial return. And it won't always, lots of times it won't, but it still proves to be something that is helpful for us to do as an organization. And so I think they're very useful, but I wouldn't come in sort of, you know, pounding my chest as much to, hey, we've thought about it, here's what we're thinking, let's talk about it, much like Tressa said. And I think Taylor mentioned it earlier, and I can't emphasize this enough. You know, 5 years ago, a lot of health systems were bummed out because they had 3 or 4% margins and they needed 5 or 6% to recapitalize themselves. A lot of health systems now are struggling to get to break even or 1%. And these technologies, there's real costs, real hard green dollars going out the door, and those add up. It's harder to see the revenue increase or the cost reductions for the reasons Tressa said and others. So it is a tougher sales environment for that reason, and it will be for quite some time, I think.
On that thread, I used to sit in a seat at University of Chicago and my inbox was just flooded with all the great new opportunities that I could be a part of. All of the, you know, everything from, I'm seeing in the chat, you know, like what, how, you know, how are you prioritizing social determinants of health, pushing care to home, you know, there are endless ideas do you have any advice for solution companies about how you tell the public facing world, or how you like to find the solutions or categories that are of interest to you, really as a time saver for those that may have solutions? Like, how do we know when to contact you, or what your priorities are, or how you like to be engaged, or when no is a no? How do you handle that in like in your day to day? Taylor, I'll start with you.
Oh man, that's a tough question. I don't know if I have the what I would call a perfect answer for that. And I'm thinking through the seat of the entrepreneur, right? Like, what's the best way? My brother actually was a hospital exec guy, and he has switched over to a healthcare tech startup. And so he grew up in hospitals. He has 15 years of hospital C-suite experience. And what he's trying to educate now on this startup is navigating through hospitals and health systems is not easy. And that the 18-month sales cycle most of the time, and there's the profit margins are razor thin. And we're looking at how do we fix the roof and buy new IV poles versus, adopting a new software that could potentially save 3 minutes a call. But if it's 1,000 calls a day, that's pretty cool. So there's really not a right answer. I would say networking probably is the best way. I know that what we do is, again, going back to the example I gave on how we are prioritizing everything into these buckets and what have you, we always look on the most conservative side first. Do we already have a solution that can solve for this? That's the first thing we do. And if not, then we start to expand our reach, and we reach out to our network partners. We might reach out to Epic. Do they know anybody? Is there anything in the App Orchard? We reach out to our Avia partners or our Avia peers in the network, like those of us on this call. And then just through networking, or maybe it's at a conference, try to identify what we think would be a good solution, and then just start engaging in conversation. Because, you know, I might find something that I'm like totally sold on, this is so great, but then I have to bring that internally, and then I need to sell it to whoever the key stakeholders are that also need to be bought in. And they might have already had conversations and say, okay, well, here's three or four other folks that we need to have conversations with. So I would say you believe in your products because you're doing what you're doing, and you just need to keep at it, and you need to network, and you need to participate in webinars like this, and just be patient and open-minded. Because I'll tell you, being in the seat that I'm in, is that when we believe in something, and we all choose to be in healthcare, and we believe in a solution, I want nothing more than it to be live 3 days ago. And instead of having to wait months for an IT security review, and then months for a legal review, and then months for a compliance review, and then months to get a signature and then do a kickoff. I mean, I'm right there in the seat next to you. And I would imagine many of the peers in the health system feel the same way, because once we're sold, I mean, we're sold. It's exciting, and we want to do it. So I don't have a perfect answer, other than I really do feel your pain. And please, please keep at it, because we do need other solutions in healthcare, and we need help breaking down the walls, and we need help thinking differently.
Thank you. Tressa, how do you navigate through, and what do you want solution companies to know about how to access you?
Yeah, I guess I'll offer a very different point of view. We prioritize our investments in a pretty simple fashion. What we have to do and what we'd like to do. So first of all, become familiar with our regulatory environment, because if your product helps us, by the way, STOH, read Joint Commission, it's a requirement. So get to know our regulatory environment and see if there's an opportunity for you, because that's where our first dollars, if we have any, get spent. We've got to remain compliant. So that's number one. Number two is look to the external influencers. You know, what else is going on in our market right now? Well, a lot of retailers are coming in. A lot of unusual partnerships are starting. So think about those things that are affecting every one of us, no matter where in the United States we are or what payer mix we're serving. That's the next set of external influencers that we need to respond to in our own organization. And then finally, I'm not going to say don't do this, but I will say to you that I don't find it effective and sometimes find it a bit offensive for people to get on my calendar and spend an hour asking me what my goals are for the year and then trying to figure out how what they have might fit. Listen, if you've already done the homework in these other areas and you're able to connect that line of sight by fulfilling one of those two needs, we will find you. Believe me, we will. And I don't mind in the informal setting, through networking, through Chime or HIMSS or Avia, through seminars like this, allowing us to share things, you will very quickly hear the things that are plaguing us. Every one of us is going to talk to you about constrained budgets, having to use technology to enable the workforce, meeting all of our regulatory around promoting interoperability, ECQMs, SDOH. We all have that. And all it takes is really making sure that you're connecting yourself to the industry. And those trend lines are going to come roaring at you. And with that belief in what you're doing and in the products you're creating, I'm confident you can come up with the appropriate narrative. And that's how I would suggest you go about it.
Thank you, Tressa. Practical advice, Paul.
Don't sell around IT. It's bad. It just creates, a lot of conflict. So one, don't sell around IT, because ultimately IT and non-IT people need to be aligned to make stuff happen. So that's one thing. A second thing, kind of to piggyback on what Tressa said, I tell everybody healthcare in the United States is perfect right now. It's just too expensive and quality is spotty. So I think if you can bring solutions forward that very clearly reduce cost and or improve quality, then those are, really well received. And then a practical thing we've started doing is I will meet with lots of different companies, but it's 30 minutes. And what I commit to them at the start of the conversation is within a week, I will send you back an email that says one of three things. Either your solution seems awesome, we need to start working together now to understand it better, or your solution seems pretty good, but the timing isn't right for us. Let's talk again in 6 to 9 months. Or thanks for talking to us, but the solution doesn't seem to fit for what we need, and best of luck to you. And the reason we've started doing that is because we're just finding so much time being consumed in cycles of, talking. So my encouragement to you all would be, have a really tight pitch, that's really very clear and, in 30 minutes, and get your stakeholder to one of the three places I just described, even if it's not, laid out in that particular fashion. That's where people's minds are going to go.
Thank you. If you know me, you know I'm an optimist, so I have to end on some good news. Whether it be a really small win or a gigantic win for your organization, what have you been really wildly excited about moving forward this year? Tressa, I see you shaking your head. Maybe I can put you on the spot.
Yeah, I think originally the external influence of just, the disruptors moving into our different geographies got us all going on this digital journey, especially the digital consumer. And now a constrained workforce, I think, is continuing to allow us to accelerate. Because look, at the end of the day, we may not want to offer a digitally exclusive way to interact with us if it's clinically appropriate, but golly, isn't it nice to offer choice? And choice equals self-service. I know nowadays most of us pump our own gas. That is a very great example that if you're able to align and take into the next generation, the fact that these workforce shortages can also be augmented and be enabled by supporting our digital strategy, it really just rolls forward that acceleration of change. And so for me, whether it's been our touchless check-in before people come in, search to schedule, online bill payment, completing forms online, whatever those are. Really, I think thematically, Amanda, it's allowing digital to provide an option of choice, but that choice is a self-service component that at the end of the day does really accelerate our capabilities with a constrained workforce.
Love it. Thank you. Paul?
I'm just thinking as you spoke about the tens or hundreds of thousands of transactions we have every month where a patient or a consumer or a family member can do something on their own, whether that's scheduling or other things. And I just think that's somebody who got to interact with us on their terms, not ours. And, I think that's going to lead to better health for people, better access, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What bums me out is that it could be so much more if we could move a lot faster. And so that's what keeps me kind of focused.
Thank you. Taylor, what are you most motivated, excited about, small or big win?
Well, the digital consumer piece that we've touched on several times. I mean, it's really exciting because, we are all consumers and we have our favorite brands for the reasons why we love them and why we continue to go back to them. And, I think that I've been in healthcare my entire career. And I think what's really exciting is to see the evolution of really putting the decision and the choice back in the hand of the consumer. Many industries did this a long, long time ago, and it's our turn. It's healthcare's turn. And I think it's awesome. I think the number one thing that, a big win for me is, just the data, the access to the data and the level of detail and how precise the data has become on targeting and pinpointing and the personalization and being able to go into a meeting with the naysayers. And we talked about that and really showing them the story. It's not a sales pitch anymore. It's an actual story of here's the data that says this is how many, and this is data coming from a Google. This is not valid health data. This is data coming from Google about how many people are searching this term in our region for this specific thing. This is a need, right? So it helps sell the story that previously you had okay data, but I just think in the last couple of years, it has exploded, and being able to mine that and put it in and weave it into a story that makes a lot of sense to help perpetuate and keep the momentum going of what we're trying to do in the digital space has been, I think, very, very exciting and a big win.
Awesome. Thank you all so much for a fabulous discussion today. We've only scratched the surface and we've only started what we're going to be able to achieve in terms of data informed, and better consumer experiences, clinician experiences, and improving on those margins with digital. I want to just thank the audience for being out here and following this free-flowing conversation. This is just the first event in our Health System Innovators series. And a recording will be, we had some questions about the recording. We did record this session and have that posted on matter.health/live in a few days. Coming up in this series, we have a Matter member exclusive event, Leaning Into Health System Collaborations, Tips for You Startups. That will be on August 10th. And our next public-facing event is September 21st on planning ROI and health system digital deployments. And on November 1st, we'll have our final event in case studies and innovation. We'll bring forth stories from health system implementations. So keep an eye out in that inbox for open registration notifications for these events. And we hope to see you there. Thank you, Stephen and Matter and our panelists again, and have a great day.